This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, should say host, but also realtors with Oakwind Realty in downtown Vancouver. So fired up for today. It's our annual market recap. You and I dig deep on the data. This is a conversation based on not only our time in the market, what we're seeing on the ground level, our ground floor, day-to-day in our real estate business, being busy realtors in the city of Vancouver, but also from the conversations we've had this year with exceptional people, and then doing a deep dive into a variety of different stats that we've pulled for this episode to kind of substantiate the trends that we're seeing.
Yeah. So if you're interested in trends, stats, wildly entertaining anecdotes, stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
We got you covered today. Short, but sweet. Year in review 2025 and Adam's predictions for 2026.
Well, you know what? We're now just the week before Christmas. We are not back until the second week of January. So there's a few weeks here where we won't have an episode. So we do want to say we're just going to jump straight into this conversation. But well, we got you. Thank you so much for listening this year. Thank you for sharing the podcast. It's been another great year. We're coming up on our 500th episode. Truly humbled by everybody who's been a part of this show over the years. And a decade, Matt, of making this show every single week. So we really appreciate you and we hope everybody has a great time with family and friends. Don't drink and drive and enjoy your time off.
Attention realtors, homebuyers, and investors. If you missed out on Atlin at Clayton Crest by Zentera Developments, here's your second chance.
Atlin sold 80% in just 3 months, Adam. And because of that success, Zentera is launching Building 2, Butte.
Located in West Clayton and walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, prices are still low for now, but not for long.
Homeowners across the Lower Mainland are using equity from their current homes to invest in West Clayton, ahead of the SkyTrain and the next market upswing. Because when that SkyTrain is complete and the market rebounds, it'll be too late.
This, Matt, is how wealth is built. Find out why Atlin sold so fast and register now at buttecondos.ca. That's B-U-T-E condos.ca.
Hi, I'm Michael Yu.
And I'm Morgan Brown. And we're the founders of Oakwind Realty. We have 9 offices across British Columbia.
Serving all major markets of BC. If you're an agent out there, just like Adam and Matt, who happen to be licensed at Oakwind, please reach out to us at oakwind.com/join and type into that message box, the rep, and you'll receive a free gift and a promotion when you meet one of our leaders.
Thanks so much. And we're looking forward to meeting with you.
See you soon.
So Adam, we're here, episode 499, the last year of 2025. You're headed out of town, so we'll timestamp it. It's the first week of December in case something dramatic changes in the next week or so. Basically, we're going to go over a couple trends that occurred over the course of 2025 and kind of talk through them. I just wanted to start, though, because we did something similar last year, and I feel like us and most people we were speaking to at this time last year thought 2025 was going to... There felt like there was momentum in November 2024, December 2024. And I feel like everyone seemed to think 2025 was going to be us emerging from a 2-year slowdown or 2.5-year slowdown. And it's been anything but, Adam. So let's just jump in here to some of the trends we've seen over the last, we'll call it 11 months.
Yeah. And I mean, we should start, Matt, for sure, saying that some of this is from being on the ground. Obviously, we're selling a lot of real estate in the city of Vancouver and surrounding areas. However, we also did a deep dive in the stats. So in a variety of different stats that we follow and monitor that are produced by the board, BCREA, also different brokerages that are producing stats, like, for example, Rennie Systems has really great stats that they're putting forward. So this is a deep dive into all the stats and what's been happening in just watching and monitoring the market this year in our business as well. So let's jump into the first one. So 2025 was a deep volume slowdown, one of the weakest years in decades.
Let's underline that, Adam, because like I said, we started this year thinking we're coming out of a 2.5 year slowdown, largely led with increases to interest rates. And 2025 was one of the weakest years when it comes to sales volume in decades. Okay. Right. 16.6% below the 5-year average in terms of sales. All property types have underperformed their 5-year norms. Detached down 20%, townhomes down 13.2%, condos down 15.6% in terms of sales volume. 2025, in my mind, was really a recession when it comes to sales volumes or transactions, deeper than the slowdown that came before it.
Right. Yeah, deeper than 2023 and 2024, which we've obviously talked a lot about on the show. You know, the second thing that really appeared like consistent, I would say, when we were kind of reviewing the stats is just that inventory remained high all year. But there was limited absorption and you had active listings up 14.4% year over year. We had listings 36% above the 10-year November average this month. And so we saw this trend of supply being built up, demand staying soft the entire year. And, you know, I was saying that when before we push record here, there was a great tagline that was put out by, I think it was REBGV, where they said it was like the perfect buyer's market and no buyers showed up. And I mean, what better conditions for buyers do you see where you have a lot of selection with very little absorption?
Yeah, well, this is it, right? You know, somebody said that there needs to be a psychological shift to generate some momentum in this market. And I feel like it hasn't come with lower interest rates. It hasn't come with this idea that we're kind of at the bottom of the interest rate cycle, most people think. So it's not going to get much better. And yet we're seeing, 35% above in terms of inventory levels above the 10-year average and sales ratios hovering around 10 to 12%, depending on the market. It's kind of an incredible moment. What about prices, Adam? Because, you know, one thing that I think everybody was expecting, especially people that kind of got into the real estate market as prices ran up, I've been thinking about this a little bit. One thing that happened, say, through 2014 through, you know, with the exception of 2018, 2019, but through 2022 was when prices went up, it was like immediate, right? You'd see jumps 3% month over month, 5% month over month. You know, I often cited 2017 in the condo market downtown where we did 30% in a year. The same has not been the case when it comes to prices declining. Like mid-2022, we saw interest rates shoot up. I think everybody was thinking, okay, we're going to start seeing some pretty significant price declines.
Right.
2022 didn't materialize. 2023 didn't really materialize. 2024 didn't really materialize. What about 2025? Where are we at when it comes to price changes, price corrections, whatever you want to call it?
Yeah. And I mean, obviously the trend is downward pressure on pricing, but it seems to be like a controlled reduction in price versus a crash, right? Like it doesn't seem to be, you know, we're not losing 20% over 6 months or something like that. We had the composite HPI, the house price index or home price index, 3.9% year over year, declined 3.9% year over year. Detached was down 4.3%. Condos down 5.2% year over year. And townhomes down 4.4% year over year. So I guess when you actually think about it, these are averages. So you have to think about there's definitely going to be sub-markets or product type where we're seeing prices come off substantially more than this. But still, it suggests a market resiliency that we've seen in Vancouver, you know, over the last 2 decades.
And we'll get into sub-markets, you know, markets that are outperforming, some that are seem to be the weakest links in the region. I'm looking at you, South Burnaby. But before we get to that, let's talk about this controlled kind of price compression, right? Because one of the things, and it's hard because it's anecdotal at this point, but one of the things I've been thinking about is we've seen this kind of slow, slight decline, like the numbers you're talking about, you know, 3.9%. That's not a huge deal when it comes to price declines. But very recently, we've seen some sales that make you wonder if things are accelerating. And it makes me think of a theory you put forward about watching detached homes mm-hmm. on the west side. That is kind of the key component to understanding where a lot of the market's going. And outline it here, Adam, because I think it was a really interesting take.
Well, no, I mean, the reality is that the Vancouver West detached market was the weakest segment of the market. So when you look at the sales ratio, it was around 9.7%. Many of the detached submarkets were down 6 to 10% year over year. We had year-to-date detached sales down about 20% below five-year norms. So what we're looking at really, Matt, is like a luxury-led correction where we're seeing kind of the top of the market being really soft. And ultimately what that leads to is price compression. So you see houses on the west side start to come down in price. Say, for example, something that was around 3.6 or 3.7, a high three number, and now all of a sudden it's selling low to mid $3 million mark. What does that do for, say, the half duplex market that's high twos? Like, will buyers continue to buy at that price point in the half duplex market or the luxury townhome market? So you start to see people going, well, hey, maybe I can get into the detached market. And also different product types like the luxury townhome or half duplex market start competing with the single family detached market. And I think a lot of buyers, if given the opportunity, will go to the single family market, right? But what you end up seeing is you see prices start to slide based on this kind of top down approach.
Right. Well, you know, we were talking about one house not to be named, but it sold very recently. I think it was listed at the start of the year, kind of what, high threes somewhere.
Started off high threes.
Yeah, 3.7, 3.8.
And not a ridiculous analysis for a house as nice as this, for sure.
And Adam, we've talked about this before. This is like Chicago, 1980s. Ferris Bueller wakes up in the morning and walks outside of a house that looks like this. Like, this is a nice house at 3.7, 3.8 with a suite.
Very specific reference.
Just sold for 3.2. Okay.
Yeah.
So just to put like a finer point on what you're saying. So if that house with a suite is 3.2, suddenly a half duplex at 2.75 or 2.7 looks pretty expensive. And
it could, you know, yeah.
And then you just run through the market. It's like suddenly everything is, prices are adjusting downward, down right towards the condo market. And in the condo market, you have a different type of pressure, right? Because in busier years, maybe 5 years ago, let's say 2021, you know, or let's even say right now, downtown, it's not unreasonable to think 40 to 50% of a building is investor owned, right? That's kind of standard. So let's say in the entry-level condo market, your market is made up of almost half investors. Well, if those investors are gone, that market's cut in half. So what we've seen over the course of the year is one, downward pressure led by this luxury compression, as you call it. And then secondly, we have kind of the nuts and bolts of the market, the kind of entry-level product where that market's kind of been hacked off at the knee. And so we got pressure coming from both sides.
Yeah. And I mean, that's, I think you're bang on, because the reality is a lot of investors have left the building, as we've talked about a lot on this show. So the typical kind of newer, there are a lot of people referring to them as like the dog crate condos. It's tough to get somebody to buy a small condo, a junior one bed with a linear kitchen right now and put a tenant in there. Mostly because people are concerned that, you know, where they used to think, well, maybe I'll make a decent cap gain or some capital appreciation on this. There's not confidence that that will happen. In many cases, you're not going to be cash flow positive on a property like this. It's going to, you're lucky if you can find something that's going to basically be in today's interest rates environment, be like cash flow neutral, right? And you're realistically probably sinking, you know, $500 to $1,000 into this condo month over month. So it's a tough sell. So, I mean, a lot of these people that have bought pre-sale in the last few years, small one beds that are trying to now liquidate them are in a really challenging position. And we see that. We see that in areas where a lot of development happened, a lot of concrete high rises like Burnaby, where you can look at like a new building that completes and there's, you know, maybe 30, 40 units that are virtually identical, and sellers are going through a bit of a race to the bottom. Like what's going to actually get this sold and what price does it have to be at? So it's people undercutting each other.
Yeah. And the thing that, you know, in other markets, you know, people would be thinking this is a fantastic situation to be a buyer. The challenge there is, one, where are we? Right? This is the big question. Like, again, going back to levels of inventory being where they're at, when do we actually kind of pull out of this cycle we're in? And even if you put a tenant in there, we're 10% off on rents, right? So, you know, the rents don't make it all that exciting either. So
the common thing we've been hearing lately is, you know, even for people that are looking at some of the smaller condos, it's that question of, am I catching a falling knife, right? And you know, when there's that much inventory that's sitting in the market or sitting on the market, you know, I think there is in some cases, if you feel like you can't carve out the right deal, certain people will move to the sidelines.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is, you know, thinking of condos, they saw the largest year-over-year decline region-wide, right? And in some sub-markets, I think, this is a much more dramatic story. But region-wide, of course, as you mentioned, the HPI down 5.2% year-over-year. Condo sales tracking just under 14,000. That's down almost 16% versus the five-year average. Mm-hmm. So dramatic slowdown in condo sales. And again, I think, you know, you were right to highlight the junior one bed. I would say, you know, the two bed condo that's kind of family friendly, that's a totally different story. But if you go to Surrey City Center right now and isolate for smaller one beds or junior one beds, that's something else entirely. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And I feel like the, you know, we've talked about this on the show and a lot of agents have echoed this, talking just about what's selling in people's listings. But it's really that, and this is coming up on the next point, it's kind of a lot of entry-level end-user product that's been selling. And, you know, that makes sense from that condo perspective too. A lot of people that want to get into the market, the 460-square-foot one-bed is maybe not that appealing, especially if they have other options, right? And I think the strongest product this year were townhomes. And they actually held up better than the detached market. They also held up better than the condo market. And I think that makes a lot of sense. Like we've been talking about, you know, like let's just think about the east side and the west side of Vancouver. Realistically, on the east side, if you're going out shopping for a livable house, you know, that might have like three bedrooms for a family, you're probably looking 1.9 and up, right? Realistically, for something that's nice and livable in most cases, if you want to be in a fairly established area, you know, a good location. On the west side, that's depending, but a lot of people for like a family home would be looking to $3 to $4 million, right? That would typically be, there is stuff now in the high twos, but realistically, a lot of people for like the three bedroom home, you're probably over $3 million. So a lot of people that are in living in the city of Vancouver, they've changed their kind of dream property to townhomes. So the ground-oriented homes, like a townhouse that would like maybe have 3 bedrooms, but you can buy it for 1.3 or 1.4. So it's dramatic savings to be in a townhome and much more realistic. It's very much missing middle product, which we've talked about a lot on this show. And so it's no surprise that this has been a product that has remained stable even in this market. And I think we're seeing that in the stats. Like the townhouse HPI was down slightly year over year, around 4%. Year to date, townhome sales were down the least in terms of sales volume, only at around 13%. So a more stable market, submarket.
Yeah, and you're right. I think to highlight the missing middle is right. These are people that are working and living in Vancouver and moving through the market. The other thing is, you know, the buyer profile for the townhome are people that often it's not their first property, right? That's right. One thing. So they're already, quote unquote, on the property ladder. The second thing is usually they're moving for life reasons, right? In yeah. a way that I feel like that entry-level condo, it doesn't really track the same way. And let's just say the detached market is detached from a lot of the local purchasers. It's people that, you know, having a second kid, getting married, whatever it is, life doesn't necessarily stop. And, you know, you need to make moves for your family. And those are the people that are transacting in 2025 for the most yep. part, right? So it totally tracks, totally makes sense. You know, another trend, Adam, and we've kind of touched on this a little bit, our sales ratios. The striking thing for me is usually the Vancouver market has a distinct pattern. You know, the busy spring, the slower summer, the busy fall, and then slower as we get near the end of the year. And what struck me was that the sales ratios were kind of almost felt uniform and uniformly low. Right. Right? The entire year kind of soft conditions dominated. So the overall sales ratio for the year, kind of a composite, 12.6%, which depending on who you talk to, I feel like that might enter balanced territory, but I feel like it's for all pretty intents much and purposes, a firm, that's a firm buyer's market. Detached, as you might guess, was lower at 9.7% for the region. Townhomes, slightly higher at 13.6%, and condos, 14.8%. But again, if you take that overall sales ratio, we're talking just over 1 out of every 10 homes selling yes. Over the course of the entire year, which is, as one can imagine when you put it in those terms, very challenging to get a home sold. You have to be providing or demonstrating kind of an exceptional value proposition and right. an exceptional time to buy for home buyers, because you're yeah. literally, it's like, it's a totally different challenge from a couple of years ago. You're actually wading through 10 homes to find one that stands out. And that makes for some exceptional buying opportunities. So it was striking how we didn't really deviate from those levels all year long.
So yeah, buyers had leverage, sellers had to adjust, and we saw sellers adjust. I mean, days on market, so how long properties were listed, was up around 20% year over year. And this was like a new reality for sellers. I mean, in Vancouver, it was almost, you know, in years prior, if your home didn't sell on a weekend, it was broken, you know, and we used to...
stigmatized on day 9.
Yeah, exactly. We used to talk about that. And now people are getting used to cancel relists and being on the property or being on the market for longer periods of time. And buyers are seeing that. And like I say, they were like, we just highlighted, when you have 1 out of 10 homes selling every month in a given submarket, you have to be competitively priced, or you have to have an exceptional tier 1 property, which are still selling relatively quickly. But buyers, it's got to be a real box ticker. So Matt, the other thing we wanted to highlight, there was a few other things here. One is that for the submarkets across the region, year over year price change kind of diverged wildly. And so yeah. this is like, to me, what this says is location, location, location. it really, really matters where you are in the region, because we saw some resilient markets, some real blue chip markets, and then we saw some places that were really lagging.
Well, location, location, location. There's another, there's a couple other ways to look at it in my mind. Like, you know, Pitt Meadows detached is down almost 10%. Tuason detached is down over 9%. You know, if I had to kind of the kind of shoot first, ask questions later analysis, there is markets that just exploded during the COVID run up. You know, some of those gains are disappearing. Interestingly enough, you know, let's take this comparison. East Van detached, down almost 7%, right? 6.9%. South Burnaby down over 10% for the year. Whereas North Van basically flat, Port Moody basically flat. I have a theory thinking about why South Burnaby, say, and East Van have lost so much more value in general than Port Moody or North Van. I think it actually works better with Port Moody. Do you want me to lay it out for you, Adam?
Yeah, lay it out.
Here's my take. I was thinking about this because why on earth does it make sense South Burnaby sees such a decline when Port Moody basically is a much more durable market and is basically flat for the year 2025. Same thing with East Van. And here's what I've come up with. And this is, I came up with this on the fly today. So holes likely can be poked through this analysis. But if you go to a place like Port Moody, you'll see houses from the 90s and potentially even newer, really nice communities to raise a family and turnkey houses. Whereas if you're looking near, you know, in Burnaby South, Metro Town, large swaths of East Vancouver, we're talking kind of teardowns, right? Or houses that, you know, if you have two kids and a dog, you look at it and go, this looks like a project. And at least in my experience, say in East Van, the nice houses, the houses where you can literally, you know, on possession day, you get the keys, you move in and you go back to regular life in a new house for you. Those type of houses are still selling and the values are still very similar to last year's values the year before. My take here is that it's the teardowns, you know, the 1922 house. And I just saw one of these. It started at 1.7 and it's got a footprint of like 830 square feet or something like that. Has the same owner's been there since 71. It basically needs to be knocked down. And last year or the year before would have sold for 1.7 and been knocked down to build a duplex. Well, if those duplex builders are not buying right now, it's very hard to look at that house at 1.7 as an end user and think, this makes sense for me to take this on, either to reno or to live in. And, you know, we're seeing, you know, that house specifically, 1.7, drop to 1.6, drop to 1.5. And at 1.5, I think it probably moved. I know there were offers coming in. But the point being, Adam, I think South Burnaby and East Van are probably showing the stats are kind of skewed because of essentially those teardown properties. And there's so many of them. There's so many kind of unlivable houses that where you really have to drop the prices right now. So it's not necessarily a sign of all houses, East Van. It's a sign of a specific type that is plentiful.
Like so yeah, interesting. I don't know if I fully agree. I don't know, but it's an interesting theory. I feel like if you go to so you're saying like end users that are not finding the type of properties that they want in say markets like the East Side or South Burnaby are going to markets that will cater to them with like a newer turnkey product.
No, not at all. Not at all. What I'm saying is...
Oh, you're saying the amount of new product. I get it.
Nicer house, like a 1998 house in Port Moody is retaining its value because it's...
I see.
It's literally, you know... apart from maybe a minor renovation, but it's basically a turnkey house and there's not the teardown product. Whereas, gotcha. You know, we've talked about on the show before, Grandview Woodlands, for instance, you look at the inventory and go, wow, there's 86 houses listed and only three are ones you'd
livable.
You'd think to live in. So it's the rest that are not livable have seen significant declines.
Gotcha.
And because of that, and the same thing in South Burnaby, it's definitely the same kind of environment or similar to East Van. So in both of those environments, you'll see huge slides, like South Burnaby, 10%. It's like, why would Port Moody, you know, different demographics for sure, different locations, obviously, different communities, different feels, but does it really make sense that Port Moody would be basically flat and South Burnaby would be decline, have a 10% decline in the last year, other than what I put forward?
No. And you know what? I think the other thing that makes sense about that is right now, very few people, it's in rising markets, a lot of people are willing to either build or to invest a substantial amount of money into a renovation, right? Because you're not concerned the market's going up. It should offset your renovation. You might even be up from doing the renovation or from obviously from the build. And so that's an exciting time to renovate. Right now, there's a real fear of getting caught overspending on a renovation while a market is in decline. And now you're left with something that you've put $2.5 million into it and it's worth 2.1 in the market.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, so yeah, a couple, here's an interesting one. Bowen Island up 3.1% in the detached market. Whistler Condos up 10.6%.
The other one was Pemberton Single Family Homes. Not Pemberton, Squamish.
7%. Squamish. Yeah, and I mean, so the Sea to Sky corridor is obviously doing really well. We talked about this a few weeks back, but we actually had this on the podcast when the report came out. This was a few years ago. I think it was Sotheby's. I'm just going from memory, but had a study of all the various ski resorts, like global ski resorts that are on par with like Whistler. And I think the argument was that on a price per foot basis, Whistler was significantly undervalued when you look at just kind of best in class ski resorts. So, you know, does Whistler still have a long way to go to kind of catch up to, in that context, right? We think of Whistler as very expensive in the Canadian context, but in the global context, you know, how does it fare? So, yeah. So I guess another kind of big story of the year or trend of the year is really there's lots of markets that are, it's hard to make generalizations about this market at all, as we know. And there's lots of markets kind of operating independently. So really knowing what's happening in the market, you got to drill down on the stats.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple that come to mind in Vancouver, as we've talked about on the show, Kits and Fairview,
man. Blue chip, true blue chip.
Yeah. Those are, those have seen, all things considered, pretty decent years. Not a bad place to be selling a property. So, Adam, here's a question, and I don't even know where are we at here. Are we, well, 30 minutes in? This is kind of right in the sweet spot. I got a question for you to end the show. And we started it by saying, you know, last year we were cautiously optimistic about 2025. We're headed into 2026. We've had 3 years of price declines, the last being 2025, I'd say being the most dramatic. We have 35% above the 10-year average in terms of inventory levels heading into 2026. We have stubbornly low sales ratios and sales volume. And what I would describe as a fragile buyer sentiment, there's definitely no urgency at this stage. But, you know, new year, new me. What's your take on 2026?
I kind of, after reviewing the stats and thinking about a lot of the conversations we had this year, it's interesting because over the last, call it decade or so, when we've been kind of monitoring the market and doing this show, there's usually something that we can kind of point to that's going to really change the sentiment, the market sentiment. And it's often like, oh, if we get a rate cut in October, things are going to start to take off or be busier. You know, like it's often driven by events, positive or negative, that influence the market. Where right now, I think that this market has less to do with I think it has a lot to do with policy and everything else. But I think that there's just a real lack of confidence in the market right now.
Issue.
It's a psychological issue. And you have to be even though I think it's a fantastic time to buy, you have to either have something that's pressing you in life to make the move, or you have to be, I think, brave, right? And you need to buy when other people are not buying. And I think those people will be rewarded.
Adam, have you ever heard be greedy when others are fearful?
I was trying hard not to say that. I think we say that 5 times a month on this show. But I think those people will be rewarded that buy in this market. Like, look, if you're going and you're buying on the west side and you're carving out a deal, you know, with several hundred thousands of dollars off of where prices were previously, and you're getting a great house in a great area and great city and a great country. I mean, I think realistically, you'll do well. But I think what buyers have to think about, I don't think next year is going to take off. I think the years of 10, 20% per year kind of price increases, I don't think those are in our future anytime soon. But I still think that buyers should be, if they find the right product right now, you should be jumping on it. Because what we learned from this market is, you know, tier one has been the most stable thing you could have bought. Like really, really great product, right? And I think that's, you know, and I those areas like we just talked about, like Kits has been incredibly resilient. So I mean, if you have the selection and you have the ability to be patient and wait and buy a great product, you're still going to do really well on it. And man, we've worked the flip side of this market so many times where there's 10 offers, 15 offers on something. Those are horrible markets for buyers. So you just have this moment right now where, you know, like the board said, the best buyer conditions missing the buyers. Yeah. So I think what I'm really doing is talking around the question of next year. But next year, I think the Kuzma thing, I think the Trump stuff will create more uncertainty in the market. I think there's a lot of fears around jobs and AI that isn't getting as much attention as it deserves in markets.
Of uneasiness, I think, is how I would describe it.
Yeah, of just not knowing, of feeling like, you know, who knows in 3 years are, you know, will this, you know, and I think it just affects everybody's kind of general job security or their feelings around their ability to make money. So, you know, so biting off more than you can chew, getting a much larger mortgage, that sort of thing. I think that is in the back of people's minds, quite frankly. And yeah, so I don't see next year. I see it being more of the same, you know, unless something really changes with buyer confidence.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit on the things I was saying to watch, right? The Kuzma stuff, trade negotiations. I feel like interest rates are, it's kind of a non-issue unless it's dramatic, right? I don't think it will be. So there's no kind of wait for, you know, that quarter point when things are going to accelerate. You know, there is a lot of pent-up demand on the sidelines. There has to be. There has to be at this stage. So that's one thing, you know, things can potentially change quickly. It's just hard to imagine that happening at least in the first half of 2026. With inventory levels where they're at, right? I think in a kind of optimistic scenario, we see sales volume increase, prices stabilize, and absorption take place to get back down to what Brendan Augmentson or Andrew Liss would call an unhealthy level of inventory,
right.
which is I think the first thing that we need to happen to kind of change the buyer sentiment out there. And it strikes me that that's going to take, best case scenario, 5 to 6 months, if not longer. So
the only other thing is when you start to, I mean, I think everybody who's watching the market right now, myself included, at some point, prices come down enough that people start to see the value again, right? Especially people that have been watching these markets for the past, you know, 5 years or 10 years, where you know, it's just like, okay, I feel like this has got to be circling bottom. I'm ready to jump back in. And so, I mean, there is that component that's like, you know, just outside of the other things that we've discussed.
Absolutely. A kind of less optimistic take than a year ago, Adam. But if history shows us anything,
we'll be wrong.
We get it wrong. Yeah, I was going to say. So actually, this might be the ring-a-ding-ding buy time sign that we're calling 2026 to not
canary in a coal mine.
Exactly. But yeah, maybe we'll leave it there and see you on the other side. And Yeah, I think that was all right. So there you have it, folks. Our discussion, all things 2025, a year. You know, I don't know if I'll miss it. I feel like it was a good year in many ways. I'm thinking real estate wise. I'm excited for 2026. I think we covered kind of the major trends there and had a lot of fun doing it. So yeah, thanks.
If I think back, go ahead. Sorry, I cut you off.
No, I was just gonna say thanks for joining me on that exciting journey.
Yeah. If I think about what will be really when I reflect back outside of, you know, family and kids and everything else, but this year AI really, I feel like I got punched in the face by AI this year. Like, and I think a lot of people did. Like, it went from being like, you know, like not there to there on so many levels. Like it accelerated so quickly. And maybe that's been 2 years, but I feel like 2025 was a real ramp up, right? Like
it's funny. We talked about it in the episode, but I do genuinely feel, you know, you see like the layoffs, a lot of companies are making fairly large layoffs. It does give this kind of eerie sense of, you know, uncertainty, a general unease about the future, but I'm still optimistic about 2026. And I'm optimistic that we're going to have a banger 500th episode, which is our episode back in 2026.
And you know, yeah. And TBD, we haven't announced the guests yet because we're just waiting on their confirmation, but it will be a fantastic show. I did want to say the one thing I feel like I might have left on a sour note there about the market next year, but in reality, I am optimistic. And I need to remind, I think I need to remind people that when you know, just balance in the market's not a bad thing in the Vancouver market. In fact, it's, if we're growing modestly, hey, what's wrong with that in terms of affordability? Like if we move to the patterns of a regular market, and I just was kind of meaning like, you know, I don't think we're going to take off like a rocket ship or something like that. And I think there's still a lot of headwinds out there. And, you know, I think it's going to be, I hope more balance comes to the market for sellers. But, you know, I mean, I think realistically, there's no FOMO, Matt.
No FOMO right now. And we'll see when it reemerges, because it will at some point. But the question is when. What else do we got, Adam? I think...
Nothing.
Let's get back to the... What are you, on the Nicoya Peninsula right now?
Yeah, I am. The future me is. I'm not there yet. I'm in Vancouver, but I will be when this is released. So...
Absolutely. Well, hopefully you're enjoying your time. If anybody wants to chat about this or anything else, of course, we have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com where all things real estate related live. We have our buyer's resources. We have our seller's resources. We have our back catalog. Also, if you find any value in the show, like, subscribe, or share with a friend or a family member. That's fantastic. Happy New Year. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. And we will be back again next year. If you want to talk about any of this, try me at 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try Matt. I'll be around in the new year.
That's right. I'm holding the fort down. So yeah, that's it. That or info at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com, which of course is our Kokomo line, which I think you came up with last time you were on the Nicoya in Kokomo. Peninsula.
Well, yeah. You know what? And again, I can't express enough, but really appreciate everybody joining us this year over the year and getting the market updates. And next year is going to be a banger of a year for the podcast. And I can't wait to have more guests and recurring guests and friends of the show on for some more insights. So can't wait. Take care. Be safe. And we'll see you in 2026. Wow. 2026.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.